Welcome back to episode 28 of the Bash Mania podcast. I am your host, Justin Bash, and I am, per the usual, excited for today's guest. 2017 World Silver Medalist and 2020 Olympic hopeful Thomas Gilman stops by the show. Gilman has one of the biggest personalities in the sport, and I couldn't be more excited to have today's conversation with him. If you haven't subscribed, be sure to subscribe. Gilman is one of dozens and dozens of great guests on the show, and there's no shortage of entertainment. So if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, be sure to subscribe. And if you want to support the podcast, I'm selling a limited number of short and long sleeve Bashmania t-shirts. On the back, it says the first 25 with the last names of the first 25 guests. So send us a message on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever, and we'll get you hooked up with that. For now, let's get into today's show with Iowa Hawkeye Thomas Gilman.
It's Bashmania! Let me tell you something, brother. He gave us everything he had in him tonight. What you gonna do when Bashmania runs wild on? Oh, it's gonna be a good one. And business just picked up here on the podcast. Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, world silver medalist Thomas Gilman. How are you, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. And I got so much I want to talk to you about. So I think it's best. Let's go back to the beginning. Talk to me about how you got started wrestling.
I think just kind of like a lot of other guys, you know, just through my father. My dad wrestled. Then it kind of, you know, whatever your dad's into, he tries to get you into. So
yep.
That's how I kind of got started.
And was it something that you knew right away you wanted to be good? Like I've seen the Flow film, The Love Me or Hate Me, and I want to pull from that in various spots. And for some people who haven't seen it and people who have, I know you said right away, like you wanted to be good at it. Where did that come from? When you're that young, I feel like sometimes it's hard to know if you're uber committed to something. You seemed super committed right away. What was it that got you super committed? And feeling like, I know you said right away you wanted to be an Olympic champ.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's a couple things. I think the first thing is just kind of like a childish kind of thing. It's a funny little story. But before I started wrestling, going to practice and stuff, my dad took me to a practice and, you know, just kind of see what was going on, see if I was even interested, you know. And
right.
I remember the coach had the guys lined up and they're doing double leg drills and of course, you know, you got to be a good partner. You double leg and then the other guy double legs.
Yep.
And so I looked at my dad. I said, yeah, I want to do this. You know, I want to take guys down, but I don't know about getting taken down. I don't like, you know, somebody tackling me.
Right.
And he looked at me and I'll never forget. He said, well, just don't get taken down.
Like it's that easy, right?
Yeah. And I was like, all right, deal. Let's do it. So went back the next day and got on the mat and the rest is history.
And I'm curious, when you're that young and you know, like, even from a childish standpoint of, okay, I did this, I want to be the best, and you obviously knew what a, you know, 20-year timetable it would be to accomplish your dreams, how did you continue to get better, especially when you were young and you don't really have so many coaches and you don't kind of have what you have, let's say, in your 20s as resources? How did you level up so early on to continue to get better?
I think it was just a little bit of divine intervention, to be honest. You know, obviously I started wrestling and I had, you know, a handful of coaches when I was little and my dad, of course. And then I remember there's a point in my career, I can say that, where my dad was like, hey, I've taken you as far as I can. It's kind of time to turn you over to somebody
right.
else. So we kind of started looking, you know, around the local community for, you know, better options as far as workout partners and coaches. And I came across Brad Hildebrandt, who was the head coach of Omaha Scout Catholic.
Yep.
If you know anything about wrestling in the Midwest, Coach Hildebrandt's the best. You know, he ran a streak of, I think we went 13 years, you know, winning state titles consecutive. And so we hooked up with Brad and Brad was a phenomenal coach and great mentor to me. And he had he wrestled in college D2 at UNO. Unfortunately, there's no longer a program there, but,
yeah.
He modeled a lot of his stuff off of Iowa here. So, you know, he kind of developed me, you know, physically, technically, and also, but more than that, mentally. So from there, it just kind of catapulted me from high school into college. And obviously, everyone knows the history there with Tom and Terry Brands and Mark Perry now. So just kind of, you know, I can't say it was all planned. It was just kind of one thing led to another. And there's a certain amount of divine intervention, I'd say.
And when you're young, I'm always curious because I feel like it's always a conversation, especially in the Olympic years, when what means the most, an Olympic, a world, or an NCAA championship. Did you have like a 1, 2, 3 out of those three, like starting when you were young and what you wanted to do? Like, where did the Olympic dream come from? Like, how young were you when that started?
As long as I can remember. So long ago, and I was so young that I remember you know, doing some shadow wrestling and stuff when I was real little, and I'd kind of go through these scenarios of how I would win the Olympics, you know, and what I would do to celebrate and this and that. And it's kind of a funny thing to think about, but and I was so young that I wanted to win the Olympics in freestyle, Greco, and folk style. So I didn't even realize
that it was only,
you know, two styles. And then as I got older, you know, I was like, oh, well, the folk style's not in the Olympics.
Right.
So I kind of lost my focus and folk style a little bit for a few years. It's like, I just want to wrestle freestyle and Greco. I was going to go the Henry Cejudo route. You know, I was like, I don't need to go to college. I'm just going to do this. But, yeah, it's definitely been number one was the Olympics. Yeah. Obviously, I think for everybody that knows anything about the epitome of the sport, you know, you want to be an Olympic champion first and foremost. Then second was a world champion. And third was NCAA champion. And not to take over the whole podcast, but, you know, I was telling the story the other day to somebody, you know, in 17 after the national championship, I kind of had like a coming to Jesus moment, you know, like, I'm never going to be an NCAA champion.
Yep.
You know, that's never going to happen for me. So I had to figure out how to move forward from that. But then I was thinking, I was kind of going through some of my notes, my goal book and things like that. I never set a goal to be an NCAA champion.
Interesting.
Everything in my goals was, I want to be a world Olympic champion. I want to be a world Olympic champion. So, you know, I maybe lost track a little bit. Maybe it was immaturity. You know, now I know there's such thing as process and product goals.
Yep.
So maybe the NCAA champion was a process goal that I kind of overlooked. But, you know, there's no looking back now. I got a world silver medalist. And, you know, the next thing's Olympic gold. So that's what we're looking for now.
And, you know, you mentioned a point that I want to kind of talk about a little later on, but we'll kind of use it as a launch pad for now. After, I think the story is fascinating with you saying, like, I'll never be an NCAA champion, coming to that realization and moving on right away, like not dwelling. There was no, like, time off. How did you maintain that proper perspective? And has that been something that's always been a strength of yours, to have that like proper perspective? Like, when did that start developing as you're going through your youth and middle school and high school career?
I think it's just having just good people around me.
Yeah.
You know, I've always kind of surrounded myself or attempted to surround myself with the best people. You know, that started, you know, from day one. You know, I have amazing parents, and I don't have the ideal childhood or the perfect childhood, but, you know, my parents did a lot for me and helped me develop a lot that way, and great grandparents. And they've always gave me good perspective and made me grateful for what I have. So sometimes when things don't go your way, you got to kind of take a step back and look at the bigger picture and say, hey, you know, you got to quit sucking your thumb.
Right.
It's going to come up tomorrow and you got to get back to work. That's kind of been a theme of my life, kind of, you know, just being a, you know, I like to think of myself as a hard worker, and everyone around me is, you know, hard worker, you know, going to work with my grandpa, you know, he's 82 years old and he's still working every day.
It's amazing.
You know, so it's like, those are the people I looked up to. So if you're hurt or you're banged up or you're sick, it doesn't matter. You got to get up out of bed and you got to go to work. So, you know, tying that into my wrestling and moving on from losses or things that didn't necessarily go my way. You know, you lose or something happens, you know, that sucks. You got to take your time to kind of be emotional about it and look it in the eye. But you got to take a step back and say, hey, you know, world's still turning. You got to do your job and whatever's next. You know, the most, you know, Tom Brand says it all the time. The most important thing is the thing that's right in front of us, the thing that's yep. next, you know? So, the most important thing isn't what just happened to me. So if you keep sucking your thumb and dwelling on that, then, you know, you're gonna fall behind because the world moves fast.
And speaking of both brands and trusting those around you, like I've heard the story about when you were at an Iowa intensive camp and you were going through like 5 workouts a day, and somebody who was only going through like 2 from Kansas, I think, beat you or something, and Brands put his arm around you after. Like,
yeah.
you can't let that, you know, mean much to you. What did it mean when you started developing that relationship with Brands, like your coach in high school, Hildebrand, who you had that relationship with? Like, I feel like that's something so many people crave is good, healthy relationship with coaches that they can trust. What did it mean to go to Iowa and continue to have that level of trust in a coach where you can keep surrounding yourself with people who you know are the best thing for you?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm actually going to answer that question. I don't know if I know how to answer that question exactly, but it's a two-way street. You know, it's not just a mentor, you know, coach athlete. You know, in the beginning it is, right? So
yeah.
In the beginning it was, you know, Tom put his arm around me saying, "Hey, you know, don't sweat it. It's not a big deal. It's camp or practice."
Yeah.
But as, you know, as you get older, as you develop through that relationship, it becomes more of a relationship. So I kind of think about, you know, like a parent. You know, when you're young, your parent kind of coddles you, protects you, looks over you.
Yep.
There's not a lot you can give back to your parent.
Right.
But as you get older, you start developing. They, you know, you're learning from them. You start giving back to them. So you start to meet in the middle. And
yep.
So I've kind of had a growing process, you know, between me and my coaches and the program where, you know, a lot was given to me in the beginning, and now it's starting to, you know, kind of meet in the middle where there's more give and take, where I'm giving some and they're taking some. Or
sure,
you see what I'm saying? So it's
yeah.
It's always evolving. And so just having that trust, and not only your coaches but also yourself, knowing that there's a lot of worth in me.
Yep.
You know, so
totally.
So yeah.
And then, you know, going to Iowa, like, it's funny because so many people think if you have a good coach or you have this, like, there's not the amount of adversity you have. And I think you've always had adversity publicly and you've dealt with it really well. Like, I know you're, you know, losing to Clark early on at the Luther Open for the starting spot was devastating to you, but you maintain the proper perspective of, like, he's the guy. He beat me. He's got the spot. Like, I want the best for him. Did having those relationships with your coaches help develop that perspective? Like, that's not that you're anytime somebody's in college, you're 18 to 22, you're young, you're emotional. Like, it takes time to develop that proper perspective, and you seem to have nailed it early on. Like, what was it that helped instill that in you to have that perspective of, like, okay, especially now where it's like somebody loses a wrestle off and they're in the transfer portal and they're gone. Like, there's no loyalty or nothing. You kind of took the high route of, like, yeah, he beat me, but number one, I'm not done, and number two, I'm going to support him in the interim. How did you keep that kind of perspective?
I think it's just it started long before I got here to college. You know, I think it just tells you what kind of person you are. Shows you how what kind of person you are. You know, you can't at the end of the day, you know, we're all on the same team, right? We're all teammates. We all want the same thing. I want to make you better. You want to make me better. That just kind of simplifies it a little bit. But I don't know. I think it's just really just comes down to what kind of person you are. You know, if because I think about it, you know, I still wrestle with this. You know, I wrestled with it, you know, in 2019 when
sure.
when. Fixes is wrestling the world. You know, it's like, am I going to sit here and sit on my thumb, suck
right.
on my thumb and want him to lose because he beat me, you know? And then, you know, those thoughts do come to your
right.
head, you know? But you got to wrestle with those. And it's like, is that really the kind of person I want to be? Is that how I want to be judged? And so, no, I don't want to be that kind of person. So those are the kind of, you got to wrestle with those things and just kind of step back and realize that, you know what, it's making me a better person. You know, he was better than me on that day and
yep.
on that match and period. You know, so what? Get better. You know, that's all it comes down to. I can't bring him down or try to tear the program down or whatever just because I didn't get my way. That's pretty selfish of me.
And sadly, you do see it a lot. Like, you see the poor sportsmanship. And wrestling's a brutal sport. So, like, I can't sit on the sidelines and judge anybody for anything, but I do have that appreciation for when somebody acts like that and they acts like you did and takes the high road there. And another time that I think was really cool was, and it's not only cool because it's cool because I can relate to it, but I'm curious in the perspective in it of, you know, after you lose to Cruz at NCAAs, you wanted to right the wrongs, but you had to let it go. Like you said to yourself, okay, I'm never going to be an NCAA champ. And I feel like so many times great stories get told after the fact. And you're telling it in a time where it's now 3-4 years ago, and it's such a small piece of time. But when you're in it, there's those days where minutes feel like hours. Mm-hmm. What did you do then that helped you not get sidetracked? Like, I know your story, so I know, like, you read a lot of books, you visit a lot of coffee shops, rode your bike. Like, I know those, like, activities, but again, when you're in it, those minutes feel like hours. How did you maintain that perspective? Because you had it at that point, but it's so easy to get distracted by what other people say or what other people think you should be doing or holding yourself to a standard that maybe doesn't exist because you just think this. How did you continue through, like, those, you know, whether it's the first couple days or weeks, whatever that time period is, of maintaining that perspective in the moment?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, like you said, like right away, and just kind of throwing a little tidbit in there. You know, Tom Brands always says, you are your own best coach.
Yep.
So what does that mean to you? What does that mean to me? What does that mean to people listening? To me, after, you know, suffering a loss or some kind of adversity, routine. So you got to stick with your routine.
That's how I am.
Yep. Follow your routine no matter what. Win, lose, draw. You gotta get in a routine. So, you know, just using that Cruz loss as a example or a reference point, you know, there was nothing that changed in my routine after I lost that match. Whether I won that match or lost that match, I came off the mat, I cooled down, I did what I needed to do, I cut my weight. You know, somewhere in there, you know, there's a time where you have to kind of find a spot to be alone and just let it go, you know, just because it's an emotional process. You know, you gotta give yourself 5 minutes. So at 5 minutes, I'm gonna sulk. I'm gonna just cry like a baby and feel sorry for myself. But after that, we're back to business. And so just staying in that routine and just doing what you know is right. Because everyone knows what's right, you know,
right.
Even in the
moment, yeah.
When you're,
yep.
you're seeing red with fury and anger. But, just following your routine, talking yourself through the situation.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of routine and the development process, I'm also curious of, you've developed such a strong personality, and I know you said that, like, going into Iowa, you were really shy. What do you think helped bring out the personality and not kind of hold yourself back from a shyness standpoint? I think because your personality has come out and, you know, there is that love me or hate me, even though both I believe and you believe more people love you. What was it? Or was there anything even specific that kind of allowed you to let go and not be so shy anymore, especially those early years going into Iowa?
I think just putting myself out there more. You know, I've always kind of been like an introvert and whatever. But just like kind of I do have a lot of things to say, and I have a lot of things to act on. And I just started kind of saying them, you know, and then one thing led to another, or one interview led to another interview, and it just kind of, you know, I was like, this is kind of fun, you know, just kind of putting myself out there and voicing my opinion, because, you know, even now sometimes, you know, I bite my tongue maybe when I shouldn't and say things when I shouldn't, you know, so it's a learning process, but just it's kind of been a fun experience for me, just kind of putting myself out there and seeing what happens.
And you have had those your fair share of moments that were like viral, like, right? Like jumping into the Minnesota corner, or where Piccinini tells you, like, see you at Nationals. And you're like, you don't want to see me at Nationals. You know, all these little, like, these nuances of stories. What goes through your mind kind of after the fact? Is there that, like, you know, I'm curious because you just said, like, you feel good after the fact because you're letting your personality out. You're kind of, you're letting yourself be more of you. Is it that you got it off your chest so you feel great? Or is it more often than not, I shouldn't have said that? Like, what's the balance of that?
I think it's kind of both. So in situations like that, like with the, some people think like everything's like an act, or it's like
right, that it's a character you're playing, or whatever. Right.
Like I have this persona that I need to, you know, live up to, but
right,
it's not anything like that. So, you know, with the Piccinini thing or the Minnesota going on the bench, you know, it's not a, I don't have this persona that I'm trying to live up to, you know,
right.
Especially then, you know, I was in the development of my persona, if anything. So,
right.
You know, I just, you know, everyone knows the sport of wrestling, you know, you're fired up. It's a fight, you know, you versus another guy, and you're into it with your teammates, and it's us versus them, and it's a battle, right? So there's all this emotion that builds up, and you just act. You don't really think, you just act. And then sometimes, you know, I look back, I'm like, oh man, I don't know if that was like very cool to do, but you know, you don't think about it in the moment. You just do it.
Do you have a favorite moment of like that? Like, it's not a persona, but if you had a favorite persona moment, do you have like a favorite?
I don't know. There's so many things that I don't remember that people bring back to me just because, you know, but it's probably my senior year at Minnesota. Cause I kind of got in this routine of running across the mat to shake hands you know, they call your name, you run out there and you stand out there for however long, like an idiot, and you wait for the guy to come meet you in the middle to shake your hand. And then you go back to your corners, you know?
Yep.
And I'm just like, I don't feel like standing out there. It wasn't anything against anybody. I just didn't feel like standing there. You know, I wanted to get out there, shake hands, go back. Cause 125 pounder, most times you're up first. So
right.
I want to get back, get my routine and get ready to go. And if I could do that a little bit quicker, I was going to do it. And so I started doing that, and then it kind of turned into, you know, a little bit of a psychological warfare thing where I'm going to take the mat and I'm going to run across there. I'm not going to give you the opportunity to come out. And then, so then it kind of turned, you know, what kind of developed, you know, from like an anxiety thing into like a confidence thing,
yeah.
In the psychological warfare. And then in Minnesota, they got all worked up about it. They were pushing me and whatever, and the guy wouldn't shake my hand. And it was fun, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, it's so, showmanship.
Yeah, I like it, you know, a little showmanship, a little emotion, you know.
Right.
Not just your typical play, right? Because some guys, I think, are too nice.
Totally. You know, like
they say the right things, they do the right things, which, you know, you got to be respectful, you got to be a sportman, but at the same time show a little personality and let your emotion come out sometimes, not too much but a little bit. And then Lezak, man, he was whipping me. And then that whole crowd, they're really fired up, they're really thinking they're gonna have something for to
was that party. The one when he said that, like his coach said, like, you only have 7 takedowns, he's got to take you down 7 times to win or something. Yeah, like that, right.
He said, don't worry, he's got to take you down 7 times to beat you.
Takedown. Pin.
Yeah, and I'm not very good at math, so I was like, thanks for doing that math for me. I have to get 7. But I think they forgot about the fall.
Yeah.
You know, in wrestling, you can put them away, knockout punch, you know. But anyways, that's probably.
Yeah, that was an awesome moment. And speaking to the psychology of it all, I'm curious too. So going back, I'm kind of fast forwarding, I guess, a little bit to, you know, you were talking about, I think in the Flow film, about how you thought Ramos was like stressed watching the mini tournament, or you heard that he was stressed watching the mini tournament. I'm curious of, number one, do you think it's not as big of an advantage as people make it out to be to sit out? And then let's talk about that first, then I'll get to the next one. Do you think it's not as big an advantage to sit out?
I think that people make it a bigger advantage than it is. It's definitely an advantage.
Right.
But I don't think it's as big of an advantage as people think. It kind of depends on who you are.
Yep.
You know, some guys do better if they can just go out and go 2-0 and that's it. You know,
yep.
The less the better. They can just maybe their physiques are different. They don't like the wear and tear on their body, or their body can't handle 6-7 matches in a day back
right.
then. But I don't know. I think like where I'm at mentally, if I'm sitting out, it's an advantage for me because I'm fresh. I'm good to go. Mind's
yep.
fresh, body's fresh. If I have to go through the tournament, it's an advantage for me because I'm warmed up, ready to go. I'm a durable guy.
Yep.
I probably do better after I have 3 or 4 matches under my belt. That saddle's warm. We're ready to rock and
yep.
roll. So it just kind of depends on where you're at mentally.
And I'm curious too, in the second part of that, I think there's, or maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm curious what it could be. The parallel between sitting out for a tournament where you're sitting the finals, and I know you've talked about how much you can get on a roll and get momentum. And I'm curious of the parallel of when you take more time off than not. Like last year, after Final X, you probably had more time off than normal. And you're coming into this year probably feeling more fresh than you've been. And I'm curious on that parallel between having more time off in a year and being kind of fresh. Like you've gone all over the place and you by no means like took time off, but if you're not on the world team, you just by default have more time to do whatever. Do you think you use that time as a benefit to the, like right before the Olympic year?
I think so. For me, I sound like I'm a crazy person, but for like whatever situation I'm in is best for me because that
makes sense. I get that.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I would have it no other way. I would not, if I could go back and change things, I would not want to be the world team member last year, as crazy as that sounds, because that's not what was meant to be.
Right.
So I think that time, I needed that time between Final X and now, let's say,
yep.
to get my mind right and
yep.
my body right. And I think I was doing a lot of just maintenance, a lot of maintenance
yep.
between January of 18 until Final X of 19. There's some one major incident that happened in there where it was just kind of set me back and it was just maintenance, right? I was just
yeah.
trying to stay up with the flow, and I needed that break to kind of like stop and reset and say, hey, we can't just keep up. We gotta take a break, and we gotta reevaluate, and we gotta improve, and we gotta improve exponentially, because there's X, Y, and Z that I need to do and get better at if I'm gonna be an Olympic champion. And if I get better at those, I will be an Olympic champion. If not, I won't be.
Right.
So it's a good time for reflection and kind of re-gearing towards something bigger.
And I'm curious too, with that time off and that time of maintenance and reflection, you've had your fair share of big moments that are talked about. And I know I've never been in the spotlight, but on a small scale, I love when things happen, hopping on social and joining the conversation a bit or seeing what's going on. And you've never really wanted that. Did you ever get curious of like, what are people talking about? Not from a standpoint of like, what do they think of me? But just like, if I release an episode of the podcast, I want to hear what people liked or didn't like. I want to kind of use social as like a sounding board. Did you ever
right.
kind of get curious and want to hop on social during any of those bigger moments or downtime, either way? Like, I know you haven't really been on social.
Yeah.
And, it is what it is. But have you ever wanted to get on, especially maybe during those moments or during the downtime of things?
I really haven't. I've never had, like, that itch to kind of get on there or have someone else look on there for me because I don't have a profile or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that I don't know. I just never, I think the biggest thing for me, just going way back to when I was a freshman in college, having a conversation with Terry Brands, like, it's just, for me, it's always kind of been a little bit of a distraction.
Yep.
You know, it's just like one more thing in your life that just, and it's kind of clutter, you know, it's not a necessity. It's like kind of anymore, like a cell phone, you have to have a cell phone. You just got to it the way our world moves fast. But social media, you don't really need it, you know? So is this one thing that, was maybe a distraction as I got, you know, more into school and more into my education, you know, I could fill that void with, you know, reading and books and quality time with people I love and having conversations instead of flipping through my phone and seeing what people are talking about. You know, it just was never a necessity for me. And beyond that, I figured people were talking more smack than I'd like to hear anyways, you know, and I'm a guy that would get on there and probably fire back at them and it just wouldn't be probably very beneficial for anybody. So
has it changed recently as you start to, you know, once you graduate college, you kind of transition from you're obviously training the same amount, but you now have to worry about your livelihood and making money and building a brand. Does building the brand and, you know, you work so hard and college wrestlers especially have so much relevance that I feel like even if you win the Olympics, it's hard to maintain that relevance. And so many are trying to capitalize off the relevance they have right now to set themselves up in the future. Does that start to change at all how you think? Like, maybe I should do this. If not, like, I know for me, I never got on social because I cared. I started my company in 2008, and I started a Facebook like 6 months later because I saw, okay, people are using this. I can reach people for free. It was a business tool. And since then, I've definitely, you know, I think it's net positive, no matter how much negative there are. But do you start thinking about the brand side of it now that you're into that portion of your career?
Yeah, 100%. So it's funny, my fiance has brought this up multiple times throughout the year saying, hey, you know, cause she has social media and the Instagram, is the big one. But you know, you see guys on there and they post about whatever, and then they get something for free, you know, or they get sponsorship or like you're saying, like building that brand. And I've talked to some individuals, about the social media, and it is appealing in that aspect, you know, just kind of from a business perspective and a brand perspective, you know, just kind of.
Do you think at that point it would distract you, or do you think at that point you could kind of separate the two? Like, are you afraid to dive in from the brand standpoint because you don't want to get distracted on the personal, like, competition side?
I think I just get nervous. It's new, right? So,
yeah.
I think I'd have to have a plan, and have somebody help me.
Sure.
You know, my fiance, and just kind of figure out what the best thing for me is. Cause I don't want to like make one and like be on there all the time.
Right.
And so, I'm not like a hardliner. I'm not against it.
Right.
I don't, like you said, I think it's made probably net positive from a business perspective, as long as it doesn't become a distraction, as long as it stays business and not personal.
And where do you see the Gilman brand evolving to? Like, have you given much thought? Like, so many wrestlers, I'm curious, they're, you know, some know they want to go coaching. Some, they think that their brand is all contingent on success or failure. Like, have you given much thought to the big picture on where you want the Gilman brand to go?
I haven't really thought about that. You know, I think, I don't know. I mean, the brand kind of thing is kind of, it's funny thing to think about for me.
Right.
I'm a humble guy. I come from humble roots, you know, if people were talking to me about a brand 10 years ago, I'd be like, you're crazy, you know, a brand. But I don't know. I don't think, I used to think that like my worth was set just in my winnings and losings.
Yep.
To a certain extent it is, obviously, you know, but
of course.
I don't think my worth as a person is tied up in that anymore. That's kind of how I've grown, is if I lose this tournament, if I lose this or lose that, it doesn't, you know, maybe it makes my worth go down a little bit. People aren't going to pay as much money to hear me talk, or come coach here, coach there, but my worth as a person, that doesn't go down. It probably goes up because I learn a lot more from that. But I don't know, my brand, think about my brand. I'm a very unique person. It's not tied to just the sport of wrestling. There's so many things that I'm interested in outside of the sport. You know, I'm looking in my backyard here. I got my chickens and my garden and all this stuff. You know, I could really expand this pretty far beyond the sport of wrestling, I think.
And that's one reason that I've always, you know, I've talked to some people that are adamantly against social and are adamantly for it. And me being in marketing for a living, I see what makes it net positive, and not everybody can always get there. But like somebody like you, you know, if somebody's not working on their brand or they're not sharing the other components to their life, like you love gourmet coffee, you love reading, you love your girlfriend's fiance's dog, like all these things, there is so much more to athletes than just the sport. And I think social media allows us to share that, right? Like if you have all these other things, how many people know you have chickens in your backyard, right? Like social does allow us to kind of share those things. And that's why I'm always curious, because like you said, wrestling is a very humble sport. Most wrestlers, like now it's a little bit different where kids are coming up and they have tens of thousands of followers. And I think it's kind of a different world where you start thinking you can be influential or be an influencer, whatever it is. So yeah, I'm curious about where that goes in the next 5 to 10 years with, because I know like when Lee was on the podcast, he's the same thing. It's like, no, not really interested in it. You know, I'm on it, but my girlfriend tells me to post more and that's it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, because everything's moving so fast in this world anymore. So,
right. And speaking of moving fast, changing gears a little bit here, next week you go to Italy, get back on the map. How are you feeling? What are you looking forward to most about going to Italy to compete?
The weather. Nah, just kidding. I'm looking forward to the weather in Krasnoyarsk. I'm going from Rome to Krasnoyarsk, Siberia, yep. Russia. So I've been following the weather. It's hovering right around zero, a little below. So I'm looking forward to the weather there.
Didn't you just win like a fur coat the last time you were over there?
Yeah.
Are you like bringing that?
That would be hard to pack. it's funny. It's a little big, you know. So I'm a short, kind of a shorter guy. So it's kind of stiff. So it stands up off my shoulders a little bit. So it'd be hard to get on the plane in that sense. But yeah, I'm looking forward to competing. I'm feeling good. It'll be scratch weight, so that's good deal there. Get to see some different opponents. You know, there's three of us Americans going, and if you count Michich as an American, which I don't, then there's four.
Let's talk about that real quick. What do you think about when guys go and compete for different countries? I don't like it. I hate it. I'm adamantly against it.
They should try them for treason.
Yeah,
that's what I think, but. I'm a hard, in that sense, I bleed red, white, and blue. And if I'm going to fight for somebody, it's going to be for America. You know, if not, then if you want to fight for somebody else, go live there, you know,
right.
don't reap the benefits of our country and our nation, and represent another flag. That's how I think.
Right.
And they tried for treason for all I care. You know, I think it's, good for the sport, blah, 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 whatever, you know,
Yeah,
I don't. That's my opinion. So.
And what is the trip like? Like knowing you have three Americans going, and you have, you know, Fix going, Cologne, who is a world team member. What's it like when, you know, you're in essence on a trip with these guys, and you're all going to compete against each other, and you all obviously have the confidence that you're going to make the Olympic team, and that's why you're going to a ranking series event, right, to get seeding points. What's the approach going into it like when you know? You know, hey, this guy's got the same goal. And obviously, it's the same domestic, but I feel like there's something more to it when I see USA versus USA overseas. I feel like it almost becomes harder, not to be friendly, but I just don't know what it's like to travel with somebody that you're going to be competing with.
Yeah, there's a certain degree of awkwardness, maybe.
Yeah.
The normal individual, but I think it's just business. You know, it's it's what it comes down to. It's business. And you know what? That guy staying across from me on that line is trying to take my livelihood, you know? So when you put it in perspective like that, it's you just take care of business and you put your blinders on and you take care of what you need to take care of. And whatever that guy's doing, I mean, he's probably doing it the best he can too. So you just worry about yourself. I don't think about things like that too much. You do, you know, you see him, whatever, but it'd be no different than going to the U.S. Open, you know?
Right. Well, and that's the thing too. Like you know, one of the best guys at the weight aside from you is Spencer, and you guys are in the same room. Like, I'm assuming that it's the same perspective. Like, this is business. We both want the spot. We don't have to hate each other. It's just, it's business.
Yeah. You take care of yourself. You start worrying about other people, then you're not worrying about yourself. So I just try to worry about myself and take it one step at a time.
Yeah, for sure. So before I let you go here, I'm just curious, you know, we're in that 90-day window right now where within 90 days, the Olympic team will be set. Are you doing anything different, or is it going back to what you said after the loss, right, where it's like routine kind of gets you through? Is it the same thing now leading up to a monumental event like the Olympic trials where it's just I'm doubling down? I mean, I'm sure you're 100% focused, so you can't double down, but is it that same thing where, like, it's just routine more than ever?
I think for me at this point, it's just being relaxed, in my mind, my training, and not getting too worked up and too uptight, you know, just kind of having, I mean, as I'm saying this, I need to, you know, practice a little more, but just being relaxed and keeping avenues of communication open with the people that are closest to me and the ones I love the most, you know, because sometimes before I go off and do something stupid and lose, doing something stupid like losing, you know, I usually start pushing people away and I get a little too ornery, and then I come home and my fiance says, well, you know, I could have told you that was going to happen, you know?
It's self-awareness, which is hard. Yeah. Not a lot of people are self-aware.
No, and just being humble enough to, like, listen to those around me when they're saying, hey, you need to chill out a little bit or whatever. So just kind of just taking time to take a step back and look at the whole picture and not pushing the people away that are trying to help me the most.
And do you have more of a perspective now? Like, we kind of talked early on in the podcast, and I guess to bring it full circle, like, are you enjoying this process? Like, and is that what part of being relaxed means is – you're going to, you know, obviously talk about this for the rest of your life, win, lose, or draw. Is there that element of stepping back and enjoying this process of right now I'm an Olympic hopeful, I want to be an Olympic champion, mm-hmm. and, you know, these next 8 months, like, all that unfolds. Is there that self-awareness to be able to say I'm going to enjoy this process and not just, like, say it from a cliche standpoint, right? Everybody's like, oh, you know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. But few people actually enjoy that process. Like, are you able to enjoy part of this process?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I got a couple thoughts here. You sure. have to enjoy it, you know. You gotta, you know, something that we, you know, Terry Brands has been talking with the team a lot, you know, starting last year through now, just having a process goal and enjoying that process. You know, if you're sitting there sucking your thumb, you're not enjoying the weight cut.
Yep.
You got to take a step back and say, what am I doing it for then? Because that's part of the process. That's part of the sport. That's part of your life. You got to. You know, in a demented kind of way, you got to enjoy those late nights where you're going to go in
for a
drill and sauna and cut that weight, you know? So you have to be able to step, like, if you're feeling sorry for yourself, step back and say, well, why am I doing it then? You know? And, you have to.
And are you constantly evaluating those process goals in? Like, I'm imagining a process goal would be more short term. So you're constantly evaluating, is it working? Yeah. Is it not? Like, how is that a very often self-aware process?
Yeah, it's an everyday thing, you know, going into practice, you know, you got to have an objective. And then you can't just go into practice willy-nilly, just kind of throwing your hat in the ring and putting in the time. It's got to be focused time. It's got to be focused energy. You know, so having that objective every single day, and it doesn't mean you're going to accomplish your objective, but you're moving towards something. And so you're not just shooting aimlessly, just punching the air, you know? So just enjoying the process that way. It makes it easier sometimes, you know, when you have a daily goal, you wake up and like, okay, here's my goal for the day. Sure. And this is what they get accomplished. You know, if you don't get it accomplished, no big deal. You're still moving in the right direction.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that's where I would get hung up, right? As if I had a goal for tomorrow, and maybe it's some kind of business goal, and you don't hit it. I feel like a lot of people get hung up in that specific goal, and then they don't hit their goal on Thursday, and on Friday they don't get out of bed, right? So I guess you got to kind of learn to roll with the punches, and like you said, you're still moving in the right direction.
Right. Yeah, I think it's all about just moving. You know, sometimes the hardest thing is just to move. You know, there's a Chinese proverb that says the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. So you like gotta have that. You gotta have that 1,000 mile journey in mind. You gotta have that final destination in mind, but you gotta take it one step at a time. You're not gonna go, you know, if you look at your life and your journey, if I look at the Olympic Games as a whole, you know, that's pretty daunting. That's intimidating. You know, sure. I look at this field, you know, with all these tough international competition and domestic guys, you know, that's a daunting task. But if I break it up one day at a time and one practice at a time, you know, it's pretty easy that way.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, man, I'm sure you got to get some rest, read a couple books before you head out next week to Italy. I wish you the best of luck over there. And hope everything goes well, man.
Appreciate that.
Of course, man. And that is today's show. If you enjoyed this show, be sure to subscribe. Go back to the archives. There are dozens and dozens of NCAA World and Olympic champions that you can hear their stories of. So, again, be sure to subscribe. Check back soon for more episodes, and we'll see you next time. See ya.
And the beat goes on.